We're going to hope this works,
Blog
Daniel.
Talk Radio.
Through the veil.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, my name is Daniel Michael, and welcome to Main Street Universe, another edition here on Wednesday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'd like to remind everybody that Main Street Universe is, in fact, a network of, I believe, 7 shows. This one at 9 p.m. Eastern Time with myself and hostess Janice R. White, our associate producer, as well as Brett Hillman, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On Thursdays, we have Queen Mother Imaku with her show Uatau, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. All sorts of interesting information on that show, including some original language stuff from the Kemetic African-Egyptian tradition. Then on Fridays at midnight, we have Jesse Ann Nichols George with her show Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Jesse is the author of 4 books, Activating Compassion and its workbook, as well as You, Me, Life, Dreams, and its accompanying workbook. Again, her show is on at midnight. She's had some great guests, Steve Halpern, and so many others, including some charities for animals, etc., etc. 12 p.m. at midnight, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour. Then on Sundays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Mr. Darren Boucare, and Darren is a reader, intuitive consultant, palmistry, tarot, spirit guide readings and other things at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans, Louisiana, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Mr. Darren Boucare, who just came back from doing a gig with the NBA, by the way. Yes, the basketball, NBA, over the last weekend. And Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we have our new host, Mr. Randy Goldberg. Randy is a Vedic astrologer, as well as very much into Jungian concepts of higher and lower consciousness and subconscious and all of this. But check it out. It's called Science of Light with Randy Goldberg, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Tuesday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, our host is Miss Susan Weed, and Susan is a master herbalist. The topics that she discusses include psychology of health, women's health issues, and herbal medicine. And there's a lot of information packed into a half hour. Susan Weed and her show Green Magic, Green Medicine, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And then all the way back around to Wednesday, which is where we are right now. And Jesse, are you there?
I am here, yes. Sorry about that little thing. I was trying to get the audio to play, and it was not going on for me.
That's quite all right. We're fine. And now we mentioned your show, Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, and I wanted to thank you because this show tonight is possible because of Jesse, because we were having technical difficulties accessing the studio page this evening. So thank you very much for helping out.
My pleasure. Happy to help you out, Daniel.
And
happy to be here. We're on 2 different coasts. That's why we broadcast coast to coast.
Absolutely. Globally, really. But, yes, so it's interesting to have made friends all over the planet. I sometimes receive gifts since I've started this network, you know, just little things. Like somebody gave me a book on Jewish meditation a little while back, and I've somebody's given me a tarot deck. So sometimes people just send me little things, sometimes in person, sometimes through the mail. Or the books you get from some of the guests you have, which you've probably experienced that as well too, Jesse.
Yes, definitely. Some really great books along the way from my guests and really interesting concepts out there. So it's fun.
Some artwork. I've gotten some artwork before. And Jesse, you have some events coming up for your activities. I thought maybe you could describe some of those before we jump into the show.
Absolutely. I've got a whole lot going on right now, Daniel. I'm getting ready to take off in about 2 weeks and head out to California myself and do some events out there. I have on Friday, March 7th, I have a book signing in Solvang, which is not far from the Santa Barbara area, a little place called Mystic Merchant. And I'll be doing a kind of meet and greet and book signing there. Saturday, March 8th, I am going to be doing a taping for a PBS show, Bridging Heaven and Earth, which airs in the Santa Barbara area. And actually, they allow people to come in and watch the taping. So if there's anybody that's interested in doing that, they can contact me through my email, jessie@jessieannicholsgeorge1.com, and I can work with them to help get them in for that. And then on, let's see here, Sunday the 9th, I have an event that's going to be going on in the Pasadena area, which is a Satsang Q&A kind of come with whatever you want to know about thing, and we're going to probe and explore things, and I'll be answering all kinds of questions there. And that's a donation, optional donation. So even if somebody doesn't have money, they can show up to that. And if they feel like giving a donation to me, they can. It's a very free, open-flowing thing. That will be happening Sunday afternoon. I'm just waiting for some of the details to be firmed up on that. Sunday night, I'm going to be on air, and people can watch my website and things for that. I'm going to be doing a live radio show in Laguna Beach, California. And then I'm waiting to hear on like three more events while I'm out in California. So people can just kind of stay tuned with me. Watch my website, jessieannicholsgeorge1.com. And then I've got eight events that are all based around the seasons, the equinoxes, the solstices, that are weekend events going on in southern Utah coming up. So that will be spread out over the next year.
So I'm surprised to hear that you're allowed to do Sabbath events in Utah.
Well, right. We just don't call them that here. We call them spring equinox events. Or
that's right. Well, the truth is the solstices and some of those other time associations are actually, they're just so ancient, they're beyond anything what people would call, I mean, you might call it pagan, but they wouldn't necessarily call it, you know, witchy, quote-unquote. I mean, solstices are very universal. You know, it's those two times of the year, the light and the dark half. That's why in the Unitarian Church that my brother is a minister at, those are the ones that they pick for doing their slightly more earthy ritual or slightly more pagan ritual days, is because they're so universal, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true. And we do really... here, they're actually very big on celebrating the things like Earth Day and equinoxes and solstices here. They're actually pretty big on that. Like Halloween is like one of the biggest festival days here in Utah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like really, really, really gigantic for them here.
I wouldn't have thought that. The Mormons surprise me every once in a while.
We're not as far apart as, you know, we think they are. They're alien starseed based.
That's right.
So,
they're almost human as well. I'm playing.
It's true. So I've got some
fantastic. I would say that universally, like all of us, you know.
That's right. We all... Even with these different groupings, and this is kind of cool with what you're doing on the show today, is even with these different groupings, we are kind of coming from the same source.
Right.
You know, different groupings are all leading back to that same source in a way.
And it reminded me when you mentioned, of course, Starseed, I'm still working on my book, which is a science fiction fantasy book. But I'm not creating worlds in this book necessarily. It takes place in the modern day or the recently past tense modern day, if that makes sense, in the modern era. So I'm not world creating here. I'm using the star seed thing or mythos or whatever people want to call it with the Pleiadians, the Arcturians. It's all kind of public domain. And I think it's a very interesting story about someone who discovers a mentor and then awakens to their star origin, and then finds other people awakening to the same thing. And I'm calling the book right now Song of a Sacred Flame. I might change the title later, but right now, and the Sacred Flame is, I was thinking of calling the series the Sacred Flame series, and the Sacred Flame is the spark of divine within us. You know, at first I might talk about it like it's something external, but I won't go too much into the plot of the book, but it is something I'm working on. It's a project I'm working on, as well as working on, and I have an editor, by the way, Jesse.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, my sister-in-law, who is a school teacher and a librarian, so she knows books.
So, that's so cool.
She's already picked apart. I sent her 5 pages. I think she sent me 10 back. that's good. I'm like, I only sent 5. but I'm not, you know, it's been a while since I've been a classically trained, you know, in-school student writer, if you know what I mean. But that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted someone to tell me, like, she actually likes the story a lot, just in the first few pages I sent. She told me she thought it was quite good, and that she said it was set up like you really have an intention and a focus, and that now I'm curious to see what happens, you know, next. She said, but there was just technical stuff that was more structural stuff, you know, if you know what I mean. Because I have it written long. I'm a songwriter, and that's another thing. Now I'm working on my new CD, album, series of songs, and it's called Songs of New Old Ways. And we have a little band here, including we picked up a female backup singer recently, as well as we have our bass player, Mark, and my brother, Scott, Rev Scott, on drums, and myself. And so far, the songs are coming out really well. We're in the rehearsal stages because we're recording a lot of the album. We want to get to the point where a lot of it's recorded live, but not all of it. At least, like, the bass and the drums and some of the basic parts have a live feel, like you were in the room, you know, jamming, and not too digitally, even though it's a digital studio, but not too mathematical, you know what I mean? But it's going extremely well, and in fact, I have a gig myself, a musical one, this Sunday, this week, at the Paradise Springs Winery, for any of you who are around here in the Northern Virginia area. Part of their thing is they are the closest winery, and they're right, it's not far from Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. And you wouldn't think if you were in this beautiful property that you were that close to the city, but you're really not all that far away. It's really a beautiful place. The room, their main building they have almost looks like you're inside of a giant wooden wine barrel. It's kind of a cool wood look to it, and in the back porch is this beautiful stone porch with a big stone fireplace and like glassed-in walls, you know, in the wintertime. And it's just a really pretty, and behind you is just like tall trees and on this hill and everything. It's just a really nice place. In fact, the picture doesn't do it any justice. The picture I shared on Facebook from their website, it's like it's a lot prettier when you're on that stone porch then when they show, because when it's there and the lighting is just right, that kind of a thing. But anyway, but yeah, I'll be there. It's actually an afternoon gig. I'll be there from 1 to, I think I'm playing from like 1 to 3 or 1 to 4 or something like that. I'm playing a couple hours at the Paradise Spring Winery, and I will be sharing some, for the first time, some new songs from the new album, Songs of the New Old Ways. It'll be a little acoustic gig, just myself. Maybe my brother might come along and do something as well. But so if you happen to live in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, it's in Clifton, Virginia, and it's called Paradise Springs Winery. Nice place. But today our topic is...
I'll have to check that out back there.
Oh, absolutely.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's... I don't know what it sounds like yet. Maybe I'll do a video the second time I play there. I know it sounds okay. I don't know how it is playing in a room of stone and glass with a PA system, a small one. But I guess you just don't turn it up very loud with stone and glass. Not exactly known as being great sound material. It is for acoustics, like speaking, but when you're trying to do like a band, that's like churches or cathedrals. I was listening to a story today on the radio on whatever that old school radio is, and not internet radio like this, and they were talking about part of the spiritual or mystical aspect of cathedrals was the fact that if you talk loud, because think of that's where you get some of your church morality, right, is because you talk loud and you sound a little obnoxious because you're in these big stone buildings where all the sound's bouncing around all over the place. So it's like you whisper, but the whispers still carry a little bit, you know. So it's like you speak soft, but your soft-spokenness is still heard. So it was, I just thought that was an interesting concept because I've always been fascinated by sound and I'm a musician myself. And that's where some of the ideas about not too loud music being played in church. Well, the old churches were very loud buildings. There were stone cathedrals.
Wow. Yeah, we don't think about that sometimes, but that's where some of that robust sound comes out of and what really gives it that majestic feel. So
yeah, it's a very haunting thing without necessarily needing, like if you're in a little room, just a little one, and it's carpeted, and it's modern sheetrock and insulation and curtains, then in the room's filled with people, you need a little PA system to probably properly hear somebody playing and singing a guitar. If you're in a cathedral and you have a choir, you probably don't need anything. It's just going to bounce off those stone walls and echo all over the place, just like it did, you know, it did and does, depending on where you are.
Yeah,
but it would
definitely
sound really dry in a room that's well insulated. It wouldn't sound right. It's like, hey, I can barely hear that guy up there. No microphone. In the old days, you might not have needed one. It's all bouncing off stone and glass.
Well, definitely.
Anyway, I guess to our topic is tonight. And do you see any sign of Janice yet, by the way, Jesse?
I have not seen Janice yet, but I keep watching here for her, so hopefully
okay.
She'll be in any time.
She said she might be a little bit late. She was doing a Reiki thing. Janice actually is a Reiki master, and she's, I don't know if she's going to receive Reiki from someone else or if she's teaching it or something, but she said she might be a bit late from doing something associated with that, so that's something she's going to start.
Good Reiki nights or Reiki event things that she does. So it could be related to something like that. But good for her.
Oh, yeah. Nice thing to get involved with. And she was, what do they call it? I'm not as familiar with Reiki as I am other metaphysical things. They call it, you get attuned with by another master or something like that. And so she's been through all that, and she's a master herself, and she's going to soon start promoting that business a bit more. So we'll go on to our stories. Last week we did good news from around the world, because I figure anybody can report the bad news, of which there's plenty of, especially if you live in Ukraine or certain parts of anywhere, I guess. So I said, we'll do the hard work of bringing you some good news from around the world, and this week we're bringing strange news, just interesting, quirky, or strange stories, or stories that might just make you go, what, or maybe even more importantly, why? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm looking forward to what you got for us.
Oh, thanks. There's one that I'll just say briefly to open up with, and I've said this one before on the air, but I couldn't find it again, but it was almost worth mentioning twice, but I'll just say it briefly and then get to my first actual story. There was one where there's a trend out west in your part of the country, not Utah though, where they're opening up a water tasting bar, just like a wine bar. And it's a water sommelier, if you will. And they're actually charging something like $14 to $20 for, well, this water tastes really good, and I know because I'm smart, and this glass of water is $14. Now, this could actually be potentially dangerous. Do we want the price of water to go up that much?
Please,
I guess only fancy water.
I think I'll go back to the wine.
I might as well just get wine in that case.
I
what am I doing paying that for water?
I've been to some primo champagne factories and or wineries, and they have not charged those prices.
Yeah, there were some. They were say ranging like $7 or $8 to maybe as low as $4, and then I think the most expensive one was about $20, I think, for a glass of water. So
that's
crazy. The details of that story I found at Funny Times Magazine, which is a publication I get sometimes. I don't have those details right now, but I happened to breeze across it again, and it just made me laugh again. I remember, I think I mentioned that once before. It fits right in with our category tonight. Now, our first story tonight could be very important. Some of these will be just quite silly. This one could actually be quite groundbreaking or maybe amazingly dangerous and wacky and strange. I don't know, because I haven't done further research outside of just a few articles. But I'm going to start right off with it. And there's a company that says they can make fuel, meaning oil and gasoline, that can run your car with some adjustments to the car, literally making it out of thin air. And it appears that this may be true. Now, it sounds like, okay, it's from a conspiracy site or et cetera, et cetera, or don't believe everything you read on the Internet, but it's been in the Time magazine. It's been in a few other, CNN and some other more mainstream news sources. So I thought it was worth sharing. If it turns out to be BS, then, you can throw rocks and stones and stuff at me later. But I'll go on to this now. A small British company has claimed it can create gasoline out of thin air, quite literally. And it seems to be for real. Now, this is how the Times news feed. The company has produced the first batch of petroleum from air by employing innovative technology that removes carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So the other hope of this is not only does it not emit this new out-of-the-air gas, not emit the bad, carbon footprint stuff that people talk about, but it actually removes carbon dioxide from the air that it uses, or from whatever, patch of air, if you will, for lack of a better word, that it uses. Since August, England-based Air Fuel Synthesis has created 5 liters, so it is in the beginning stages, of about, that's equal to 1.32 gallons of gasoline by combining carbon dioxide extracted from air with hydrogen from water to form a basic hydrocarbon. I was trying to say that slowly. The essential ingredient of gasoline itself. The company's chief executive, Peter Harrison, shared the development at a Friday conference at the Institute of Mechanical Engineers in London. And as I said before, this is a small company in Britain that's made about 1.32 gallons of this stuff as of this article. This article is actually a little bit older. There are newer stories of this and some updates, too. This one, I think, is 2013. So this story is about a year or two old, and I didn't know this. And I look for stuff like this all the time, alternative fuel. So it sounds too good to be true, but it is true. Tim Fox, the head of energy and environment at the Institution of Mechanical Engineers, told The Independent, another publication. They are doing it, and I have been there myself and seen it, according to Tim Fox. The innovation is that they have made it happen as a process. Fox said to the newspaper that Air Fuel Synthesis has a small pilot plant that uses well-known and well-established components to extract carbon dioxide from the air, but it's the first one to pull the whole thing all together and to really make it work. The Daily Mail, another paper, reported that the company mixes air with sodium hydroxide, then electrolyzes the resulting sodium carbonate. This releases carbon dioxide, which is then combined with electrolyzed hydrogen from water to create hydrocarbon. And this can be used, this hydrocarbon solution can then be used as fuel. And so this was one of those stories where I was looking around And it was funny because I was looking around, I was like, is this an April Fool's story? And then I looked, and the beginning of this particular argument said, check the calendar, it's not April 1st. So it was funny that I was thinking that when I saw it. But to go on, again, there are a few criticisms. One is that just basically it's in its early stages, and they're wondering how much alternating of someone's car would have to be done to make this practical, or would just be a new car technology. It looks and smells like petrol, but is much cleaner. It's clearer, so back to the positive, sort of going back and forth, than petrol derived from a fossil fuel. We don't have any of the additives and the nasty bits found in conventional petrol, and yet our fuel can be used in existing engines. Now, that was part of the debate. Another person says you have to alter the car. So there is a little bit of debate on some of this. The Independent describes such an innovation as, one person is trumping it as, the holy grail of emerging green economy, as it does not emit the polluting greenhouse gases of traditional oil or coal. Harrison said it could revolutionize contemporary environmental and economic landscapes. And of course, that could have an amazing potential if you have this process that can actually genuinely take air and make it into gasoline that can run your cars. Now, this argument on this particular article was that you could use it right away in the cars. I saw other ones that were saying you had to manipulate the cars. So some people are disagreeing on the functionality, and for the safety of the car might be the thing, as far as it lasting and being able to break it down properly, maybe. But again, this is still a somewhat new thing. I think the oldest article I saw on this was 2012, and I've seen ones from 2014 and 13 from it as well. So I'm curious, had you heard of this technology, Jesse?
I have not heard of this technology, and you know, of course, like anything, when I start thinking, okay, well, we're doing something with the elements, whether we're plugging into the earth or grabbing out of the air, how are we going to alter the air in doing that?
Right. And of course, that's something that's been missing from some of the articles I saw, is they were so happy in the, on one side of the green argument, that they weren't thinking, okay, what could this do to possibly mess up the air? Because that's exactly what I was thinking, too. It was like, okay, this sounds nice.
How many times have we been in that position where something sounds really great? It's like, look, we can dig into the earth and grab the soil, and then, you know, years right. later you're finding out there's sinkholes going on or there's, you know, other things happening. Places.
We can blow the tops off of we can blow the tops off of mountains and get coal, or we can take the slate under the ground and do the fracking and all this stuff, and we get free gas, and we get all, you know, all this, and it just goes on and on and on, like you say, or in this
so
case that
my question comes in is, you know, we still need to look, you know, maybe we need to put a few of those people like my niece, you know, to work on the chemical engineering side to look at how this is really going to alter things before we get, you know, too far out there with it. But I'm
right.
sure that they're gradually working into that. And, you know, I know we're coming up on the half hour here, Daniel, and I was thinking of playing a break song because we do have Janice in the queue as well. And,
okay.
And then we can bring her on the air as we come back from that. What do you think?
Absolutely. Sounds good.
Okay, let's do that.
All right. Thank you.
Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day. As we enjoy the earth turning. Blessed. And the magic of dusk is upon us. And blessed are we in the dark of the night, as we slip into dreams that are calling. Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the eternal. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon us. Blessed are we in the dark of the night as we slip into dreams that are calling. Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the eternity. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon us. And blessed are we in the dark of the night as we slip into dreams that are calling. Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the eternity. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon us. And blessed are we in the dark of the night as we slip into dreams that are calling. Blessed are we in the awakening dawn. Blessed are we in the morning. Blessed are we in the light of the day as we enjoy the eternal. Blessed are we as the twilight descends and the magic of dusk is upon us. Your dream.
And we are back on the air, and we've got Daniel Michael with us, and Janice will be back with us, I'm sure, in just a minute. This is Jesse and Nicole George. I'm running the switchboards tonight for Daniel, and I'm turning it right back over to him.
All right, and thank you very much, Jesse, and, of course, thanks again for sitting in so we could have the show on the air this evening. And my next story is from, again, this one is sourced from Funny Times magazine. It's a little old school paper here. I'm not reading from the internet. and my brother and I get it here at the house. And this one is entitled Strange Old World, and the governor of Gorontalo Province in Indonesia made a declaration or a decree that female secretaries should be replaced immediately by males. So this is the governor saying, if you have a female secretary, you should fire her and replace her with a male secretary. And, of course, do you want
what?
To know why?
Yes. I totally want to know why.
He was responding to a...
I might not complain if I was... So.
He was responding to a recent expansive or excessive spat of extramarital affairs by male bureaucrats and their female secretaries. So basically it was because the bosses were having affairs with their young, pretty secretaries. But get this. He was saying, okay, you can hire a male. He was trying to decree, yes, you can hire a male as your secretary, or, and for those of you with more feminist leanings, you're not going to like this, but it's also part of the humor and the truth. In certain parts of the world, it said, but old women who are no longer attractive are acceptable.
Oh, man.
That is rough.
Rough comment there. Let's face it, that's a rough comment.
It is. And that's from the governor of Gorontalo Province in Indonesia, if anybody wants to write them a letter. So don't blame me for that comment. So saying, yes, an old gal can be hired if she's deemed as unattractive. So how do they go through that process? Oh, you're old and not attractive enough to have the job.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, you know, it's like, that's kind of a mixed thing. It's like, yay, I got the job, but I'm old and unattractive.
Maybe by that time you don't care, right? You're just like, hey, just happy to have the job.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, that's very...
Earth.
showing you where some places in the world are still not exactly enlightened towards how they view the different sexes. And here's an interesting one. Has Janice come back yet?
Let's see here. She's not back yet.
Okay. Just checking. This one I found interesting.
For a few minutes.
Extract of the cockroach is a delicacy among some Chinese people. They believe that it has the ability to miraculously reduce inflammation, defy age, this is extract of a cockroach, and cure tuberculosis, cancer, and cirrhosis. Wow. This is according to QuartzQZ.com. And this article is called The Entrepreneurial Spirit. It's reported that the Yunnan province, it's funny that Yunnan came up because I saw that word somewhere else today. But anyway, Yunnan province in Silicon Valley type business center there in the province, these pulverized cockroaches can sell for the equivalent of, now get this, this is pulverized cockroach. I could have made a fortune on this in Florida, by the way, folks. $89 a pound. $89 a pound.
I think
for pulverized
cockroaches. I think they could be there.
Wow. I think I spent $100 to get rid of the cockroaches in my house, and it was like a holocaust of cockroaches in that place. It was horrifying. I mean, it was, for someone that was not used to growing up in an environment of having a giant bug crawl across my chest, you know, while I was sleeping, it was a very unusual experience. Yeah, I was in Florida, and basically, to give you the scenario, when I was in Florida, it was, I moved in with a guitar player friend of mine, and we were going to start playing music again. I had a little bit of extra money at the time. My electrical work had been going okay, so I had saved some money up, and like normal in construction, I was laid off, which just always happens. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to move somewhere else. I'm single. So my friend, the guitar player, lived with an old guy who could barely take care of himself. He just didn't get around well. Nice guy, smart guy and all that, but he just, his place, was the place that he found that he befriended and became renting a room from, pretty big place, and it was a disaster. So when we got there, it was just this roach infested, I mean, I had never seen so many insects in my life. And like when we put in the bug bombs, you were like crunching them walking across the carpet. It was a carpet of roaches. eventually we got rid of them from this quiet little gel that you put in the corners. Again, I don't know how safe that is for humans, but or everybody or anything. At that time, I was a little less informed about certain things, but it did work. They did finally go away, but man, it was insane how many cockroaches are down there. But I mean, this guy, he couldn't attend to the house. He just didn't get around well, so we tried to help him get rid of them, and eventually we did. But anyway, $89 a pound, and five pharmaceutical companies, listen to this, I always think about this, money just fascinates me sometimes, have contracts with ranches. Ranches have formed in Sichuan Treasure Cockroach Farming Cooperative, it's called, in Sichuan. A startup farm, now, and that's specific to the Jiangsu province, and they're setting up farms for cockroaches. So imagine now there are places where they want to make and breed more cockroaches. And if you've ever lived in Florida, that would just blow someone's mind if they're a native Floridian. Which I'm not. I'm a native Baltimorean. But, okay, entrepreneur Michelle Esquenazi was asked by the New York Post why her all-female crew of licensed bounty hunters, Empire Bail Bonds from New York, is so successful at tracking bail jumpers into the open. She offered a five-letter vulgar euphemism. I think I won't go into that. Anyway, and it goes into a couple of other entrepreneurial things. But anyway, there are people that were vandalizing and people that were doing strange things to the cockroach farming cooperatives. And so the idea of starting a farm to grow cockroaches is pretty amazing.
To me, that's just kind of bizarre, really. I mean, I know that we get a lot of medicinal stuff out of things. Like, I think of when you started
right.
on this, we use, like, scorpion venom for certain medicinal things now. But I'm sitting here thinking, having lived in some desert territories where you deal with cockroaches, and like Texas, I mean, they're just massive in Texas, and like you say, Florida is another area, and you're thinking, do we really want this unleashed massive population of cockroaches that are so hard to kill to start with when you want to?
They've been around since the dinosaurs for a reason.
A trade, like maybe they could come and get the cockroaches from these areas instead of breeding extra ones.
Right. And the idea that hit me with that as well is $89 a pound.
No.
I don't know if crack. I don't know. I don't. I haven't bought anything illegal in the longest time. I have no idea. Is that better than
cockroach powder, Daniel?
Yeah. We may be in the wrong business.
It's a good thing to keep in mind, I suppose, if we need to.
Here's one that's a little disturbing. This was someone that wanted to go to jail, and this is in Kobe, Japan, and an unemployed 32-year-old man carried out a minor theft, stealing a wallet from a parked scooter. So, a minor crime, I guess. Apparently, just to be locked up in the world-famous city. I just can't imagine that mentality, but okay. Hey, I was locked up in Kobe. Because remember, Kobe is home of the Kobe beef, which is acclaimed for its French, Chinese, and octopus cuisine, amongst other things. In fact, Kobe's Nagata Ward precinct is renowned for the special gourmet boxed meals prepared by local bento shops delivering to daily prisoners. So I think it's known to be a place, like, if you're going to get locked up, it's one of the nicer places to be so. And they give you some pretty good food while you're in there.
We do have Denise back on the air now with us, by the way, Daniel.
Okay.
I just wanted to you know that. Hi,
okay.
Denise.
Hi.
Welcome.
We turned a corner and the phone went off, so. Can you hear me?
Cell phone.
We can hear you.
Yeah.
So did you have
can
a
you
story,
me?
Denise?
Did I have what?
Did you have a story for us?
Oh, yes, I do. And it's something I saw on the news today, but I also found it on the web. And it's called Rudolph Always Knew, as in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Fans give reindeers fluorescent antler makeovers. And this
uh-huh.
is from Helsinki. Rudolph the Reindeer is having a glittering antler makeover. The latest attempt to haunt some of the thousands of road deaths from the roaming caribou in the wilds of Finland. And it looks like a little, maybe, L-O-L-I-L-A, of the Finnish Reindeer Herders Association said 20% of the reindeer have been painted with various fluorescent dyes to see how the animal reacts and whether the paint is resistant to the harsh Arctic climate. If successful, the animals with the glittering antlers will be free to roam Lapland, a vast deserted area north of Finland, northern Finland, where herds can pin up to 200,000 reindeer. Mm. And Olio says the reflectors and reflective tape have been proven unsuccessful as reindeer have torn them off, and roadside warning drivers of roaming reindeer have been stolen by tourists as souvenirs. So what they're doing is they're painting the antlers in fluorescent colors and fluorescent dyes. So people on the road will see them before they actually hit them with their cars. So it gives a new meaning to Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, so to speak.
Hmm. Absolutely. A real-life Rudolph running around.
Yeah.
And hopefully not being...
It seems like that could create some controversy a little bit with some of the animal activists putting dye on the reindeer antlers.
Mm-hmm.
That,
yeah.
You know,
I that could possibly happen, but the way that I see it, and I don't live in Finland, is that you can lose a lot of reindeer just by them on the road and people can't see them. Sort of like
mm-hmm.
when the deer come out here and you don't see them until they're pretty much right in front of your car, which is
right.
too late for the deer and too late for you.
And
there seems
around
to be some
here,
kind
though,
of road death situated with that, so it seems to be a lot of reindeer running around.
Yeah, I wonder what other measures could be taken outside of the lights would maybe be the fault, right? Is there something else going on that's pushing them to the roads? But they're strong, they're clever. They'll chomp up your garden, you know. The deers here, they come right into the yard. I think they're fascinating.
Yeah, I knew it was one time. Last year, when David and I came home from some kind of event, and there was just like six or seven of them just walking around in the parking lot, like, okay. And, you know, I'm like, God, you know, where's all these deer coming from? But they didn't bother me.
They're
really close to one of them trying to get into, you know, the house.
It's a funny thing.
They didn't bother me. I didn't bother them, so... them walking up to you is not that far-fetched.
And they can hurt you. They're a big, strong animal.
Oh, yeah, they can.
Usually attack. They tend to want to stay away.
Yeah.
And I've had experiences before. Well, I won't go into that, but they...
Okay.
No, I was just saying, I would say very vaguely without mentioning anyone's name. I was laying, we were kind of laying outside on a blanket, and I was sort of making out with a lady, an ex-girlfriend from years ago, and a deer, I looked up and a deer was like right above us. And it made a really strange noise and hit the ground hard. But then it kind of made a noise and went away. That was an interesting.
Wow.
Wasn't sure if that
very
was a good.
Very interesting. So,
turned out it might have been a bad.
Instead of you, it could be the other way.
Didn't really work out.
And I want to say hi, Jesse, because I'm like, oh, when I first got on, it's like Jesse's on the air. Okay. So.
Yeah. Well, hi, Janice. It's great to be here. I just there were little computer glitches happening. Back there on the East Coast region, it sounded like, and I was able to get in, so I offered to come in and open up the switchboard and just be here to run the switchboard and listen in tonight.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I had to call because we were having technical difficulties, so I was like, can you get into the studio? I can't get into it.
Uh-huh.
So I want to thank Jesse again for allowing the show to happen. So I sort of called in.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Jesse.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. These are some very interesting and strange stories you guys have found tonight.
Oh, I have
yes.
One more, and it's kind of short, but I thought it was really interesting. So, Daniel, can I read it?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wisconsin rubber duck bill racing to the finish line. Madison, Wisconsin, and, you know, Madison is where our friend Selena Fox lives.
Absolutely.
The Ducktonia 500 in Sheboygan Falls and the Lucky Duck Derby in, Menomonee Falls may be soon to operate in Wisconsin without fear of breaking the law. The state Senate on Tuesday passed a bill legalizing rubber duck races in Wisconsin. The measure has been cleared by the Assembly last week, and now it heads to Governor Scott Walker for his signature. Nonprofit organizations commonly race the plastic little ducks with the numbers on the bottom as fundraisers. But the legality of these races was called into question after the state Justice Department warned about the village of Mischot, it looks like, M-I-C-H-I-C-O-T, that has its annual rubber duck race amounts, money given to illegal gambling. The bill would create an exception for rubber duck races similar to the laws that they have in Minnesota and Michigan. So, you know, racing that rubber duck is not just in your bathtub, folks.
That's right, and I like how it says similar to the laws in other states, like rubber ducky racing. You know, it's cold up north, and sometimes there's people out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I know I have relatives there, so I'm talking about some of my own, but not in that part, way up in Maine. And that is, I like that, of course, the environmentalists are saying, the rubber ducks, you're throwing rubber out into the, you know, and plastic out into the ocean, that, you know, it's just going to become another thing that's going to be there forever. So that was the reason,
yeah.
I think, made it illegal. I guess they said, well, if you send them downstream and if it's for charity or maybe collect them, I don't know what the other exemptions were. Do you have to go find them after? I don't know.
Well, I would think that, you know, if they have a prize winning ducky or something, they would go after and find it. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah. And that is funny. That's a funny story.
Wow.
So,
duck racing.
The reason why I was like, oh, I found that we have a bunch of rubber, well, I don't, but David does. He has a bunch of rubber duckies And actually, something odd happened yesterday. It was the end of Aquarius, and I was trying to move the candle, the Aquarius candle, into the kitchen, you know, so it could burn all the way out. And two of his rubber duckies were on, and he has the type that that flash different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was laughing. I said, oh, David thought, you know, this was a nice, funny thing or whatever. And I was like, oh, it's cute that you put on the rubber duckies. And it's like, I didn't put on the rubber duckies. And I'm like, okay, they can't just turn on themselves because they have a little button at the bottom of the duck that you hit it and it starts flashing. He said, no, I wasn't upstairs at all. So I guess it's a visit from my mom or dad. So, but I just thought, Then I saw that story about the rubber ducks, and I thought, I gotta talk about that.
It was meant to be. We were meant to hear people in must race rubber duckies for some reason. But I have one last one, and I think you'll like this one, and then we'll be signing out after this. It's a short one. At Atherstone, England's Tricross Zoo, a program is underway to try to teach quarter-ton giant tortoises how to speed up a little bit. That's right. Mm-hmm. They're trying to help him against the race against the hare, even though I think he won that thing anyway. An extended outdoor pen had been built for the speedy 70-year-old, which I love that, Tim, a tortoise, 40-year-old, and then a 30-year-old as well. But a 70-year-old tortoise, they do live a long time, folks.
Mm.
Basically, they've been trying to lure him with food and other things to get the tortoises to significantly improve their way under 1 mile per hour gait. So basically, they're trying to take that 1 mile an hour tortoise and speed it up. Of course, I like the title of the article, which was unclear on the concept or as to why. So anyway, everyone, you've been listening to Main Street Universe. Thank you, Jesse, for showing up. I think we've got about 3 minutes left.
Just under that, about 2.5.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Janice.
Yes.
Hello. Thank you.
And thank you for sharing. Janice White is our associate producer here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Yes, associate producer.
And Jesse Ann Nichols-Jours has a Friday show at midnight called Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour, the author of 4 books, Activating Compassion the Workbook, You, Me, Life, Dreams, and its accompanying workbook as well. So thank you again, Jesse, for allowing this show to happen this evening.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, Jesse.
So happy to do it for you guys. My pleasure.
And I will sign off here, and then you can hit the song and the plug right after this. Remember, everyone, that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Have a good evening.
And I can imagine a lot.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.